Next man up, 102.5, the game, second hour on this Tuesday. Jake Lyman and Parker Kelly with you, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We start off the 10 a.m. hour by going to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We are joined by Nick Suss, Titans beat writer at the Tennessee. And Nick, appreciate you taking some time. How's it going this morning?
You guys are really interrupting my Netflix time this morning. So I guess I'm going to have to get off my laptop for a little bit and actually talk and do my job.
I know. We were a little jealous that we haven't been able to start quarterback yet. Going to get a little bit of an in-depth look at what Cam Ward's rookie season looked like. Anything that you're looking forward to seeing, any specific moment or game that you're excited to see from Cam Ward in this quarterback documentary?
I'm always more fascinated by the off-the-field stuff, the personality things, the actually figuring out who the human is, because, look, we all lived last season. I know there are many, many people listening who would prefer not to relive last season, and that is totally your purview if you're that kind of person, but I'm watching through, and I'm probably halfway through the second episode now, almost done with the second episode, and the interesting stuff is, like, hearing Cam talk about I'll give you guys this. The first thing I've ever heard Cam Ward say that he's not good at is that he can't beat little kids in Fortnite anymore. It's that little kids are too good at Fortnite for him. And that is the first time I have ever heard him admit fallibility. One of the first things he says in the first episode is, "Kobe was my favorite athlete until me."
Wow.
Like, he's Cam Ward, and we know who Cam Ward is. And yeah, I mean, he's Cam Ward. So a lot of it's kind of the confirmation bias of whoever you see him as, you're going to continue to see him as that guy. But it's fun. You kind of see the tender moments, the interesting moments of him taking a sack in week one and having to understand what he shouldn't have done, and him realizing he can still do some things that he likes to do, and him realizing there are other things he can't do. And it's interesting. It's fascinating, but it's also, we all know this, let's not get the wool pulled over our eyes. It's a documentary made by the NFL about the NFL. So it's going to show what the NFL wants to show. There's not going to be some fist fight we hadn't heard about and all that stuff.
Right.
It's going to be what the NFL wants it to be.
And I know Titans fans excited to look back and see the behind-the-scenes look at Cam Ward from last year, but a big year coming up for Cam Ward. He's down throwing with his receivers in Miami this week, and training camp is just 2 weeks away. Specifically for you, what will you be looking for as kind of checkpoints, markers of progression for Cam Ward as he gears up for season number two?
It's so hard to recognize this stuff, right? Like, what I want to see is Cam Ward free to play the way that Cam Ward thinks he needs to play. So much of when I reflect on last year, and so much of when I think about, well, what actually was the progress? What actually was the step forward? It feels a little bit miragey. And I don't mean that in the sense that I don't think he made progress. It's that I don't know if he made progress that's productive to who he thinks he is and who he wants to be. I think back to that 4 or 5 week period in 2024 when Levis came back from the injury, and he was putting up good numbers week after week, and the Titans weren't necessarily winning, but you got to that Houston game and he put in the win and everybody's like, okay, he's taken that step forward. But it was a little bit more of, no, he wasn't making turnovers. He wasn't making the terrible play. He was getting the ball downfield productively. They were sustaining drives. And it wasn't necessarily that his play as Will Levis was improving. It was his play as a lowercase q quarterback was improving. And I think to an extent that happened a little bit with Cam, where the running game was working and the offensive line found some cohesion. And he was playing with a bunch of guys who, frankly, would be his number four receiver this year. And he was putting up better numbers and he wasn't turning the ball over and he was playing efficiently, but it didn't strike me as the kind of Cam Ward that the Titans drafted him to be. So I want to see that efficiency and I want to see that sustainability. And obviously you like to see the run game and all that stuff, but if you want him to be the franchise, if you want him to be the guy that turns this team around, the kind of success that he had last year needs to be background success. It can't be the whole of the operation. So how do you see that in training camp? I truly have no clue. I'm not going to pretend I have an idea of how you can see that in training camp, but you'll kind of see it with the play calls. You'll kind of see it with the risks he's willing to take, with the way he can control or assert himself instead of being part of a system. If he can start being a guy who is more than just the manager of efficiency and kind of the straw that stirs the drink, if that actually means anything. I've heard that cliche. I don't actually know what it means. But if he can be the guy, capital T, capital G, that's what I look for, instead of just, is he completing passes and is he getting the ball where the play dictates and all that stuff. That's average quarterback stuff. That's not great quarterback stuff.
We're talking to Nick Suss of the Tennessean. Nick, maybe you can provide some optimism, because on this show we've been talking a lot about the offensive line, and I am one, encouraged by what I've been able to see out at minicamp and OTAs with the type of scheme that Brian Daboll runs. Lots of option routes, and you've been out there as well, so you've seen this. So it forces Cam Ward to get the ball out of his hands quicker. But then my mind goes to, okay, well, what about when they need to go down the field and play action and they need to run the football? Because the way my mind works, I think, okay, well, you got to have a good offensive line to be able to do that. And outside of Peter Skoronski, there are just so many question marks across the board.
You're right. There are question marks, but I'm not going to call them question marks in the sense that, I mean, I said for so long, coming through that 22 season, 23 season, even the 24 season, if you can get league average line play, if you can particularly get league average tackle play, just check that box and move forward. And I think that last year, what the Titans got with Dan Moore and J.C. Latham was league average tackle play. League average tackle play is going to make some mistakes, but I did the math on this. I think that the two of them combined to give up a little under 3 quarterback pressures per game last year, which is roughly what you'd expect from offensive tackles in a league where edge rushers are so good and so dominant. I'm not saying that Moore and Latham are a strength of this team, but I feel a little bit more confident, more that I look around the league, to say that offensive tackle is not a weakness. Now, if you go to the interior, if you go to that center spot and that right guard spot, a lot of questions. The good news, if there is any good news, you asked for me to provide some optimism, is that historically speaking, those are some of the easiest positions to find great talent on free agency and in the later rounds of the draft. That's primarily because teams don't actually use a lot of very high picks on those positions, so you kind of have to find it that way. But teams have found a lot of good players through lower leverage draft slots and lower leverage contracts. Does that mean I think these guys are that? I really don't know yet. I want to see the pads on. I want to see how Jackson Slater can take a step forward in year two. I want to see if Cordell Volson seems improved. I want to see who Schlotman is. The two rookies, I'm still hesitant to say will factor into the rotation at all in camp before I see them wear pads. They do have to earn that to a certain extent. But yeah, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I am overly bullish on this being a great offensive line. But I will continue to say what I've said in the past, which is, when you have gathered the receiving core that they've gathered, and when you've invested in a number one quarterback, and when you've invested in a really high quality play caller with a track record that Brian Daboll has, you put all that together with an average offensive line, you should be able to be a pretty productive offense. Are you going to be elite? Are you going to be great? You don't want to be average anywhere if you want to be elite, but at the very least, at the very minimum, can this team be average up front? I don't see why not.
So I'm glad you brought up the center and right guard spot. I've been on record of saying that I think eventually, I don't think it'll be this way at the start, but eventually I believe Pat Coogan will end up being this team's starting center, whether it's towards the end of this regular season or maybe to start next year. But as for right now, Austin Schlotman is slated to be the starter. He wasn't the starter in New York last year. Maybe Brian Daboll sees something that we don't. Do you think that Andre James, who they've also brought in, could compete for that starting center spot to begin week one against the New York Jets?
I'm not going to rule anything out. It's entirely possible. I do think there's value in continuity. And obviously there's no such thing as continuity when you've got a completely new coaching staff, but bringing people who know the scheme over to kind of ease the burden of some of the new guys around them is helpful. And I think that's a benefit for Schlotman. But yeah, you don't sign a guy if you don't think he's going to help your team in some capacity. Does that mean Andre James is a guarantee to make the roster even? I don't know. You got a lot of offensive linemen. And if we just want to play the roster calculus game, let's say the average team carries 10 linemen on their active roster. You got your five across the front that we expect to be the starter based off of what we saw in camp, that being, or in mini camp, those being Dan Moore, Peter Skoronski, Austin Schlotman, Cordell Volson, and J.C. Latham. So that's five spots right there. You got three young players who you expect to make the team just by virtue of their youth and their draft slot. So that's Jackson Slater, Fernando Carmona, and Pat Coogan. You're up to eight, and you don't have any depth pieces at tackle right now because all three of your young players are interior. So you're going to have to keep probably one, maybe two swing tackles. So that's where you got somebody like Ryan Hayes, you got somebody like Austin Deculus, and you got somebody like Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon. Let's say you keep two of those guys, so you're not just rolling one deep at tackle. There's your 10. If you keep two of those guys, you're at 10. Are you going to keep an 11th offensive lineman when you've already got three backup interior linemen and one of them, or two of them rather, can play center in Slater and Coogan? It's going to be really, really hard to justify. I can't think of a single team in the NFL that would keep four backup interior offensive linemen with how common cross training is. So unless it comes to a point where Coogan, Slater, or Carmona is going to struggle to make the team, or unless it comes to a point where one of them starts cross training at tackle, it's going to be very difficult to envision one of those guys being on the 53 come August 25th or whatever that date is. Now, if one of them sticks it on the practice squad and you use game day elevations and you can kind of game the math the way they did with Corey Levin last year, that's possible. But it seems, just if we're playing roster math, it seems more difficult than one might think.
We're talking with Nick Suss from the Tennessee. And Nick, before we let you go, I saw your story yesterday and the excerpt that you put out on X about Jeffrey Simmons and how the lowered usage from Robert Saleh might actually lead to more production. I thought that was fascinating, that getting less snaps might actually lead to Jeffrey Simmons being put in more advantageous positions to go make plays.
Yeah, it's kind of what Saleh's been saying, and I know that we are naturally skeptical of new things, and I'm including myself in this, which is why I kind of went out of my way to look into this research. And if you trust the data that's scraped from Sumer, and if you kind of look at all of this stuff about the NFL, it does. So logically, we all know that if you're on the field on third down, you're more likely to be defensively facing a pass play than on first down. Teams pass the ball more on third down, especially third and longer situations. So that means you're going to get more opportunities. And if you look at it, I can't remember the numbers directly off the top of my head, but Jeffrey Simmons last year, I believe, was on the field for mid-80s, 84%, somewhere around there, of the Titans' defensive pass snaps on third down. You look at what Saleh had Quinnen Williams do with the Jets a couple of years back. I believe it was 95% of defensive third down pass snaps Quinnen Williams was on the field for in his last full season under Saleh. Then you look at it, Jeffrey Simmons averaged pressure on one out of every five defensive third down pass snaps he was on the field for last year. So if you're upping it from 84% to 95%, I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you guys right now, but that's roughly 40 more snaps per season on third down. If that's when the pressures are coming, if he's getting one out of every five third downs he's on the field for, he's bringing in a quarterback pressure. That's eight extra quarterback pressures per season that you create from Simmons on third downs. Now you got to take him away from somewhere else if he's not getting the first down pressures, if he's not playing the same way. But when you get a pressure on third down, you got a really high likelihood of turning what could be a scoring drive into a punt or what could be a touchdown drive into a field goal. And if eight times over the course of a season, one player is stalling an offensive drive, that's a win or two right there. That is truly tangibly what you can look at and say a way to increase the likelihood of winning is to get off the field on third down more often, end drives more often, give yourself the chance to flip the field more often. And so will this work exactly mathematically like I'm describing right now? Who the heck knows? I'm not going to pretend any of us know any of this stuff, but there does seem at the very least to be a logic to Saleh's perspective on maximizing usage potential for Simmons rather than just putting him out there as much as you can.
Nick, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning. We will let you get back to your Netflix watching of Quarterback, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, y'all. This is fun.
Nick Suss from the Tennessean, our guest, will react to what Nick had to say coming up next. Lots of great insights there into Cam Ward, as well as Jeffrey Simmons. I thought that stat he has in his piece was fascinating. We'll get into all of it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.